Welcome back to our Crazy 88 episode of... Oh my gosh, anime was not a mistake. Almost forgot the title of our dang show. I am the giant mecha fighting robot, piloted, of course, by my co-host.
The schoolboy that the giant mecha robot befriends, and my friendship gives him powers, Dan Ryan.
And I, of course, am Jonathan Kwiatkowski. We are continuing our Kill la Kill retrospective today with three easy breezy beautiful cover girl episodes of Kill la Kill. But before we get there, Dan, we had... some momentous news for some of us during this week. Ups, downs, highs, lows.
But not all of us.
Well, what can I say? The rich get richer and the Dan gets nothing.
You get two wieners, I get...
But I'm sure that's something we could recap in our life updates. Yeah. I guess we could start with that. A big bounty was delivered to me fresh from the sea. None other than the PS5 arrived at my doorstep. And my address is not going to be disclosed on this podcast. But if you search it up, you can find it. But it's going to be a challenge to carry out my house. So... yeah, wear comfortable shoes if you do think about taking it. It's wonderful. It's big. It did not, you know, make me entirely happy, but I couldn't afford any games at the moment. And yeah, the only thing out really is Spider-Man that I would want to pick up. Mm-hmm. And maybe Demon Souls.
Yeah.
But Demon Souls is a hard game. And I won't be good at it.
I mean, that's why I'm mulling things over. I mean, mm-hmm. I loved the first Spider-Man, so Miles Morales is is an inevitability for me. But I really like... Demon Souls, like, looks really beautiful, so that's why I'm leaning. But mine did not arrive.
I know, and I'm just worried about it. It's not like I'm playing it consistently. I got through Astro's Playlab. It's cute. It's like a PS retrospective. And it shows off the controller and all its features. And if there's anything to say about this, it's this controller, because it feels like I'm actually being held for once.
Well, that's what people are saying.
Yeah, it's cuckoo crazy.
I mean, that's like the one of the show-stopping points of the of this gen, seems to be that DualSense controller. So. Mm-hmm.
And it's quick, but I do see a lot of people online overcharging, overbuying, and just bitter at the overall pre-order thing. We can be lucky that a certain friend of the podcast is on our side for a change.
And business is business.
It's just good business, Dan. So what can we say? Scalpers have families too, but try not to scalp if you can. Yeah. He is supporting his debt and his life on it. So, I mean, it's a business, I suppose.
That'll tie into my tangent, actually.
Woo! Okay, so PS5, I'm excited. It's here. Like I said, it hasn't been on a lot. I've been reading online. If you have a PS5, beware of rest mode. But I'm sure it's a rarity. Every time a new system comes out, there's always, like... the few odd systems that get blown up on the internet. I know we had the Xbox smoking.
Yeah, which was funny.
It was funny. It was fake, too. It was apparently like a vape.
No,
like,
it was vape, yeah.
There was plenty of Snoop. New Jersey legalizes it. I'm not the only one that's going to be smoking soon in the state of NJ. Jokes to be made, but funny drapes of all. But I enjoyed it. And that's PS5 news, I guess. Anything else anime adjacent?
Well, to follow up on the PS5, I think what you're feeling is understandable. Mm. I think in this day and age, an investment like a new console is... you're going to baby it for a little
Especially a new launch console for a new generation.
It's understandable to have a lot of nerves surrounding it, because it's a big investment, and it's like, you know... You want to hope that the bugs, not the bug snacks, are all, you know, nothing catastrophic will happen to it. I have been, like, mine shipped, and the delivery date was up in the air for a little bit. Now it seems like I will be home, but for a little bit it was looking like I might not have been, and it would have been a rainy day, and I'm like, oh god.
Like I was watching mine like a hawk, and it said delivered before it came, so I immediately ran out. I was like, I ran to the neighbor's house. I was like, do you have it? And they're like, no, nothing happened. I pulled the cart in, and then they showed up like 2 minutes later.
Yeah.
So do not fear. Just be ever watchful and ever present. Another pro tip, put the disc in the right way. It's like conducive if you're, it's not conducive if you're standing it up. You have to like turn the disc upside down. It's like, it doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
So that sent me on a spiral when I put my first disc in. I was like, oh no, what's wrong? But, oh. Apparently it's just upside down.
I'm gonna have to use it horizontal because that big boy, there's no... Unless I put it literally in my window to welcome ne'er-do-wells, there's nowhere else I can put that thing.
Just like the Christmas Story leg lamp, Dan.
Yeah, it is fragile, so I'm not gonna risk, you know.
Yeah.
Especially with my pup,
if it tumbles, the whole house is going down.
Like a domino effect. He'll knock the Star Wars figures into the PS5, the PS5 will tumble, and then that'll, like, Humpty Dumpty. But
your pipes will break.
But no, I am looking forward to it. Again, you know, kind of similar boat. I guess I will get Bug Snacks for free with the PS Plus stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I'm mostly going to be trying to finish some stuff that I've started just in...
Mm-hmm.
HD or whatever the fuck.
Until Cyberpunk comes out, if...
but Demon Souls is the most likely purchase. Miles Morales is up there too, but I'm gonna wait and, you know... Because we gotta budget the storage on this for the time being.
Goodness, yeah.
So it's like, yeah, well, that coin toss will come when it comes. But I am looking forward to it.
I guess I have one game in conjunction. Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory. Memory of Melody.
That's right.
It was supposed to come yesterday. It didn't, but I'm excited because I had to get it physical because I'm a Kingdom Hearts shill, and they had the Kingdom Hearts Ultimanium first part before Kingdom Hearts 3 on Amazon for release in June. So I had to get that because, you know, that's my baby.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. That's all I have. I have one thing, but I think you're going to talk about it, maybe. And if you don't, I'll chuck it in.
Well, the only anime news that I have to bring to the table, is, they did put out another trailer for Godzilla Singular Point, and wonders never cease. they showcased a few monsters in that trailer that I never expected to see in anything again.
Mm,
I mean,
like
my boy Anguirus is in there, and he doesn't get a lot of marketing. He doesn't.
I know.
He shows up sometimes, but he's not like, as I said back in the day when we did the Criterion releases, he's popular with Westerners and not in Japan. Hmm. So he's in there. He's, you know, the look of the series is kind of like the people are 2D, and then kind of like Zoids, the monsters are like a blend of 2D and 3D, so one's like Anguirus, like, pop, because they're like hyper-detailed, almost like Digimon-looking models, but they're emphasizing like the horror aspects of it too, like they look, you know, fearsome, and, but also in there... Because he hasn't gotten shit since, it wasn't one of the ones that we watched for the podcast, but one of the lesser-liked Showa-era Godzilla movies was Godzilla's Revenge, or it was released in Japan as All Monsters Attack.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a shorter movie that was released for a children's film festival, and it was made super cheap. It's like, it's like 90% recycled footage. Mm-hmm. But the new footage that it had a like a frog-like oni monster named Gabara, and
like Cabrera.
Yes, exactly. And I've mentioned him before because in my conspiracy theory, the toxicity might be based on him because he had like electricity powers.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't shown up in shit since then. He no one likes that movie. No one really likes him. Mm. So he hasn't shown up in anything for, if we're in 2020 now, almost 40 years.
It's been 40 years.
And he is in this anime. They show him briefly. He's gotten, like, a revamp that looks like a Dark Souls monster.
So this is an anime, then?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And where is it available?
It's going to be on Netflix next year.
I'll have to watch it.
Yeah, it's not out yet. I'm sure we'll showcase it.
Yeah, and while we're at it, like, thank you for that Godzilla marathon. Check out our episodes. I've been re-listening to them as of late.
Really?
Yeah. I'm excited. I want to go back and watch the other ones.
Of course. Well, it's, I mean, the, you know, we got the whole collection still. There's plenty of ones that I didn't showcase that could probably be fun for viewings.
I make fun of the Mothra twins, but they're really my spirit animal, if I would have known.
No, and they're consistent. Any Mothra movie you watch has the Shobijin.
Yeah, I've been scrolling through their GIFs where they emerge from their tiny vehicles, and they're like, it's me.
In one of the Rebirth of Mothra movies, they actually get, like, a rival. She's like a little evil one who might...
Sign me up.
...channel you, yeah, I don't know, yeah. So... She rides around on, like, a bat instead of a moth, I think.
I love that.
But that was basically the only anime thing that I noticed.
Well, so. I watched the Pokemon Twilight Wings expansion episode on YouTube. It was good. Yeah. It was exciting. I've had a few debates with my friend Mark Zero Jr., fellow co-host of Nightcaps at the Theater, where I prefer the second DLC, even though I barely touched it because of Hades and, you know, the other thing in my life, but I need to get to it. And he prefers the first DLC, so we've been butting heads with that. But I have to say, like, this Twilight Wings thing has really done the Pokemon series justice. Like, I'm happy that it exists, I'm happy that it's there, and I'm happy that they're taking the time to look into characters that I initially was like, oh, okay, more Pokemon, whatever.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of invested, and I wish they would just do a fully fledged anime in the style of that music video and travel through the generations, but it is what it is. Yeah. I know Dan will eventually watch it. Just give it time.
Yeah, well, I think in terms of Pokemon,
Zarude.
Well, yeah, that's coming. That I think.
How do we get him? I didn't look up.
There's a newsletter in December that we can get that code from.
Another monkey.
They can't have too many.
Too many oohs.
But Ash and Go caught Eternatus. And they did the little four episode, the Sword and Shield thing concluded. Rose gets away, and they, just like the game, they catch Eternatus, and then he's like, I've only seen screenshots of the episode, so I can't really tell exactly what happens, but it looks like they do, like, the Indiana Jones top men thing to him at the end, like the old lady professor from Galar, like, takes Eternatus' Pokeball and puts it in a safe inside another safe, and then, like, has, like, a don't open note over it, and then just locks it away.
Well, so, the plot line's gone.
But yeah, other than that, no other news. But.
I feel like there was something else I wanted to talk about that I saw a trailer for or something, but it's not at the forefront of my mind, and I did not write it down, so... I guess that's all the anime-adjacent life updates we have. Is there a tangent this week to speak of?
Yes. But it is not a conventional tangent. This is mostly an appeal that I think you could get on board with, which is why I'm using it as a tangent.
I'll have to run it by my staff. my cabinet members.
So, you know, peek behind the curtain for this podcast... Almost every single thing that we have watched, we own, like, the physical copy of.
Yes, we're physical shills.
I think the only exceptions to that being Saint Seiya and Blue Exorcist.
That's not to say that it's also available on streaming services, because most of the stuff we choose is... We never really mentioned that. Maybe we should see, like, where you could find this if you're not a physical corporate shill like us.
No, we'll make a point of maybe doing that as we keep
in
going.
In our new section, maybe, like, you know.
Yeah, like the recommendation thing at the end. But, you know, aside from those, like, handful of series, which I gotta make offerings at the Celebi Shrine to make sure that Saint Seiya is not taken off Netflix before I showcase more of it. But beyond that, there are, like, a few series that I would very much like to showcase, but the legitimate means of watching them are scarce.
Yeah.
And one such series that I'm not going to name, because if I do...
You'll spoil me.
...decide to, you know, showcase it eventually, because I want to. Because I think it's a series that would warrant a lot of debate and discussion here. You know, and I went searching for a means to watch it. And the options are... the one that pops up on Amazon is a $700 Blu-ray set. And I'm like, there's no like, this has to be like a con exclusive thing that you know, scalpers are selling it secondhand. This can't be real. So then I Googled it, and I saw like an articles from like 2016, like fans of this anime are fuming over $700 Blu-ray set.
Sounds like a Right Stuff set.
Yeah, so it was you know, it's legit. That's the price it's always been. And the options to watch that full original series are that $700 Blu-ray set and an anime streaming site that, you know, requires a subscription but doesn't give off like the most professional setup. Like it's like it feels like one of those things where if you bought a subscription to it, you know, and even for the context
the debtors
of this podcast,
at your door.
Yeah, like you buy a subscription for it and they fold like a month later, or they get bought by another streaming company that you know, drip feeds their catalog over time. And I don't like that because, you know, on the one hand, streaming, like, the more obscure streaming sites like this, like yeah, for the most part, they're gonna take anime that would never get attention otherwise, and they are watchable there. At the very least, they are watchable with dub, sub, you know, they're in, you know, the visual fidelity is fine. Things that were pulled out of some archive somewhere that would not get showcased otherwise. But my plea to nameless, like, corporate entities is just make affordable Blu-ray sets and we will and we will buy them. Like, they will be bought. That's
Dan's they will be found moment.
That's yeah.
They will be bought.
To
live in the paradise realm that is Dan Ryan's mind. What's next? World peace?
It's a foolish prospect, mind you, but I'm like, okay, you know, some of these shows, like, if the only thing keeping them in, you know, a given market is just, like, a streaming service that either it won't last or it won't keep them on there forever... You know, that's like, even if it, like a bare bones, just like release of something so that there is like a physical copy of it somewhere that people can own and it's not going to be like lost media at any point.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, because we've struggled to find a lot of anime that we love.
That's affordable.
Yeah. Like, Cyborg 009 is...
the original. I need... I've been looking for that, too. Is that what we looked for?
we've searched for it, yeah.
Okay. I was wondering if that's what you searched
no,
for. Because
no.
I've also searched for that, too, as a physical media show. And not the new one, the original one
yeah,
that
no.
I want to see.
Yeah. You know, I would keep you posted about that show. Yeah. But it's just kind of like...
We could go halfsies down.
Yeah. But, you know, it shouldn't come to that point because, like, it's... You know, in the grand scheme of TV and movie releases, like, you know, even with that Criterion, those Showa Godzilla movies, that's like 15 movies or so in a collection that cost like a little over $100. And you got to think, you know, is there like a technical reason why you can't get like 100 anime episodes onto a Blu-ray set and charge for them, you know, for the same price that a complete TV show Blu-ray set would cost, which tend to top out like over 100 or under 200 or something like that.
Or lower, depending. Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, especially for older shows and everything. But it feels like it comes down to who has the license. Like, who owns, like, some, whatever weird bargain was made in the 90s to where these licenses ended up, and they're not going to let go of them. So it's like, come on, folks, just release them in some capacity.
I know.
People will buy them.
The pessimist in me, though, is like, it's business. I know we've referenced that many times this episode, but I feel like if they put it out, it's not going to be cheap, because it's a very niche market that we're in, the anime industry. And they know us weebs, us nerds, we'll splurge a little bit. We're also getting older, so I think that's why we're kind of falling back on physical media.
Yeah.
Because nowadays, I mean, I've worked with children, I hate to admit it, but they don't really rely on physical media. Like, I've handed kids DVDs to, like, watch for research and stuff, be like, oh, look at the show, I have this recording on DVD. They're like, I don't have a DVD player. And
so you get, like, the boomer webcomic of, like, how do I, like, I eat this?
Yeah. Like, no, honestly, I was like, well, you know, I have two, there was, like, the student that I enjoyed who, like, shared similar humor with me. And, like, I was like, you'll really like the show. I had the old copy of Pushing Daisies, and I just got the Blu-ray copy of Pushing Daisies. And I was like, you know what? You've been such a joy to teach. Take this. You'll really enjoy it. And she goes, I don't have a DVD player, but I think my aunt does. And I was like, well, that touching moment didn't play out exactly how I wanted to in my teacher mindset, but c'est la vie. We keep moving on. So I think that's something we're going to have to deal with, especially since Disney... I mean, Disney's, like, the main proponent that I see now that's like, you don't own it! You just borrow it from us.
Yeah, and that's, like, and that's one of those things where, again, they're, to minimize how much of this is old men yelling at clouds thing, to minimize it, a lot of these streaming services, again, get things out there that would never get out there otherwise. Like, I was joking that Disney Plus has the fucking Black Hole up, which is their old sci-fi movie, I think from the 70s, and, like, no one's doing a celebrated release of that anywhere, but
except
it's,
Dan Ryan.
Yes, but it's up there, you know, for the first time in a long time. But it's, like... With Disney and Netflix and Hulu and all of, like, you know, HBO Max and all the major ones, it's like, okay, they have something resembling a business model. At the very least, you're aware of what they're doing, and if Hulu and Netflix suddenly dropped off the face of the earth, it would be more than a drop in the bucket. Like, people would notice that.
Waiting for that solar flare. May it hit us soon.
But, like, with these smaller ones, it's kind of like... You don't know what their practices are, you don't know how long-term they are, and it's like, you know, are you gonna pay for a subscription, and then it's gonna, you gotta get gold membership to watch, like, a certain number of, you know, and it's, Hulu and Netflix, and, like, they have, like, eyes on them, so it's a little more difficult for them to pull stuff like that, but... Again, and so, you know, and if the risk reward balance thing, you know, I may end up having to use that streaming service if I want to showcase this this show. But I'm not happy about it.
Neither am I, Dan. And I mean, I agree in all the respects, but at the same time, you know, we're getting older, as I said.
Yeah.
This is something we can't control. It's beyond our ken.
We got one foot in the grave. It's not... You know, we're...
If they take away physical media from me, it's like, well, another thing's been taken from me. Let's keep going.
But they still sell the boxes. They sell the boxes with, like, a digital code inside. That's it.
And that's not the same.
It's not the same.
It's not the same. I want a nice desk. I want a nice 8-track to put in my machine.
Juicy.
A cassette. Good tangent, Dan.
Yeah. That's my appeal for today.
Interesting that we can make appeals. I'll be taking that into future notice as I scrape the bottom of the barrel for tangent topics in future. But let's get to the docket today. I have very little to introduce to our Kill la Kill episodes. As I said, we're watching three episodes, episode 15, 17, and 18, and where we last left off, they were just heading off. We had the big half-act finale of Kill la Kill the series, where Ryuko finds out that, what's her name? Pink girl.
Forget. Oh.
Nui?
Yeah.
Nui has revealed that she has, in fact, killed Ryuko's father. setting her on a vengeful kind of transformation to this Frankenstein-esque monster with Senketsu that was outdone by, oh my goodness, Matoi. Yeah, Mako Matoi. Mako Makanchoko.
Yeah. Makanchoko's hugs.
Yeah. So we're at this point where Satsuki has now vowed that the Tri-City School raid trip will begin, where she will conquer the biggest cities in Japan that haven't been conquered already by her academy in order to unite them for another ulterior motive. We're going to be skipping through some of the Tri-City School raid trip and then getting to, like, the third act finale of this before, like, the grand finale of this series today in three episodes. But anything that you would expect? I know it's been a while since we've seen this. Yeah, and you were surprised last time we watched is all I remember.
Well,
of some revelations that came to be.
Because I forgot...
Nui was a character.
Yeah, like, I always forget that she's about to show up. I actually... it'll come flowing back to me once we start watching, but I don't remember a lot of the Tri-City Raid offhand. I need to refresh on that.
Mm.
You know, and I'm sure once I see it, I'm like, oh, okay, it's this part, but, like... Mm-hmm. I don't know, I'm just, going in with that mindset, I'm excited, because it'll be kind of a surprise.
Yeah.
In a certain regard.
It'll be like meeting an old friend, Dan.
Yeah.
And this is the point where I feel like the anime series dips just a bit before picking up again.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, gives the audience a little bit of a rest, a little bit of break in between before the next big bomb drops.
Yeah.
In episode 18, which is going to happen in episode 19, which we will resume with next time we get to Kill la Kill. But with that being said, our final thoughts said, let's go on a Tri-City School raid trip, Dan.
Yeah.
Get in the tank.
Woohoo.
Where's the chopper? 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 I hardly knew her. I am the lioness who has expended all her energy in hunting rabbits. We're back with Kill la Kill, episodes 15, 17, and 18. A nice, light, breezy kind of dip into another rising action that is the show.
Yeah.
Any initial thoughts, Dan, before we go episode by episode?
Well, just like I thought, even from the get-go, I remembered what stretch we were in. Crab guy, obviously, he still stands out to me, even if I don't remember the context all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I always remember Crab guy. And of course, the build up into the final reveal going on here, because, and I do forget it, I think, because I forget, you know, this was just like, what, a 24 episode series?
25, I think. There's an extra episode on the Blu-ray.
Oh, okay, yeah. Good. But... Yeah, so, I mean, it kind of, I forget how, you know, it's longer, or I remember it as being longer than it actually was, but, you know, I do remember all these beats now, but it's, you know, and then Ragio gets to strut her stuff and all
with
her
Karen
shit.
Hair tuck.
Yeah.
Haircut. All right, so before we get into the episodes we watched, I have our segment, Drawing Boracoon is hosting The Cutting Room. Episodes 13 and 14, what you missed. So we missed the majority of the Tri-City Schools raid trip, which is basically two comedy episodes where the Elite Four dips around the Japanese region and conquers different high schools. They have different tropes, like one's really into like the Digimon, like Four Directions, the Guardians of the Four Directions.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There's one of those. We get the I think it's Kansai, Kanto, wherever we are, which is like the really ghetto region that's run on money, and it's just interesting to see how the different schools in Japan handle this similar scenario going on. The Elite Four Goku uniforms are being upgraded this whole time, so our Elite Four has to fight without their uniforms, which we see, and they all presumably succeed. The Tri-City School raid guys to supply Revox clothing, so Ragio reveals like her counter plan to this plan that's like, this may be something that I have done surreptitiously behind the scenes that even my daughter doesn't know about. And Ryuko is avoiding wearing her uniform because where we last left her off, she's like, I'm never going to put you on again.
Yeah.
But then obviously that changes because when we resume our episode, she's wearing Senketsu once more.
Yeah.
We then meet Shinjiro Nagita, who runs the school paper, who is actually Nui in disguise, which I did not remember at all that Nui had this whole... It's a whole episode thing where it's like, oh, it's one of these characters that we have to come to learn to love and trust. And then it's just Nui. It's me,
yeah.
Nui.
Yeah.
Clothing is Sin. Ryuko is defeated and her Kamui is cut into scraps. Ryuko is then spared by Satsuki, who shows up to challenge Nui and is like, don't hurt her. She's mine.
Yeah.
But you cut up her Senketsu anyway. Senketsu's pieces are recovered by Ryuko. She still can communicate through the scraps. Mitsukugi reveals his true identity as an officer for Nudist Beach, taking over Kansai's high schools, Ryuko obtaining the uniform scraps, and Ryuko growing stronger without Senketsu. Satsuki has the final piece and is fighting in Osaka, and Maku is going on a food tour.
Yes.
So she's going on a tour to get supplies and souvenirs for her family back home,
yeah.
Which is the comedic part of those episodes, but we had to skip it because there's a story that must be told. So episode 15, Don't Stop Me Now, named after Dan's favorite band, Queen. That's a joke. Dan doesn't like Queen.
Oh, my brother does.
I also
so
do.
It was, yeah, a tangential reference. I thought you were, yeah. I'm not that cultured.
Sumugu and Mitsugi arrive at Nudist Beach headquarters, and the battle between Kanyo Takaradas, or as we'll refer to him, Crab Guy, and Hinoji Academy continues. After having his citizens dispersed by Satsuki Kyurien, we find out that he's been bribing his citizens, and I can imagine that this is a scenario that would happen in the tri-state area.
Yes.
If you are bribed to fight, we'll become fighters for hire.
Yeah.
If the money fits. But Satsuki says, money is in power, fear is. And she scares away all the supporters. Takarada unveils an anti-Goku uniform weapon in the form of Dotonbori Robo, or Gold Mecha Crab. Giant enemy crab appears, and I thought that Dan would really enjoy this segment because he usually likes big crabs.
I do. I love all big crabs, like Kingler, Crawdon, the various bosses that they appear.
The list goes on.
But one thing, because this might be a little trivia fact for the folks at home. At one point, the Dotonbori Robo, one of its secret weapons is to expel this goo onto,
Sayagayama.
Yeah, Sayagayama is fighting him. And that's, like, a recurring motif with, like, a lot of, like, Kingler and Krabby did that. And a lot of, like, Mario enemy crabs do, like, foam or sludge. And apparently there's, like, a Japanese species of crab that, when threatened, will expel, like, goop. So it's like, if anyone's wondering why that's always referenced, then that's why. But the Dotonbori Robo can do that,
yes.
So.
However, the rest of the Elite Four appear with their new 3-star Goku uniforms, a lot of updated designs that we see. The rest, aside from Sanageyama, are in their Mark II. Sanageyama's in his Mark III, since he fought one extra time in the series. And Iori hands Uzu Sanageyama his new uniform as well. Good designs all around. We don't see them that much. I think they change one more time.
Yeah.
They're like blink and you miss it, but they're cool. They're like golden. They're slightly more, except for Inamuta's, who's just Porygon at this point. It's like, this is a downgrade.
Instead of Google Man, he's just pixel art, so he's high poly.
Yeah. There is some unique banter between the Elite Four with Inamuta and Jakuzure, who goes like, Kanto versus Osaka money. Well, who taught you how to speak that way? Why, you did, my snake. And it's like, they're animal parallels that we mentioned last episode, yeah, as well.
And even you said that in the original Japanese, it probably sounded better.
Yeah,
it was probably,
yeah,
like a snappier exchange, yeah, than just like, oh well, that venom came from you, or like, you know. So
I mean, I speak like this, but normal Americans don't,
because again, when I watched this show back in the day, I think it was there was only the Japanese dub that was available.
Still, and on Netflix, I think. I don't think they have the English dub.
Like Crab Guy, I didn't because he talks like, he has like his,
the gangster accent.
Yeah,
he's supposed to have the Kansai accent, maybe.
I would assume, like, yeah, every time they do that, it's
the hick accent.
Yeah, so I would assume that was what they were going for with that. Mm. But yeah, no, they're all, you know, good banter. All
right, so Sanageyama dons his Blade Regalia Mark III and defeats Takarada by doing up the butt. which is a thing in Japanese media, I suppose, but
taxes weak point for massive damage.
Yeah. And he questions, who gave you an anti-Goku suit? Nudist beach. Goku Matoi then arrives at the scene. Oh, Ryuka Matoi, not Goku Matoi. Ryuka Matoi then arrives at the scene and starts battling Satsuki for the final piece of Senketsu, the Sekai Tekko. Unable to transform.
The glove.
Yes, yeah. The one glove that Satsuki is wearing, increasing her power and yet easily stolen at the same time.
Yeah.
Unable to transform, we do get this speech from Satsuki where a lioness uses all her strength when fighting rabbits. I don't think lions hunt rabbits, Dan.
Yeah, they're not in the same ecosystem.
I think it's too small prey, don't you? Maybe a gazelle? I didn't make the imagery, the metaphor. Eventually, Nudist Beach makes an appearance in mechs very similar to the one Takarada was using, and Akaru Masugi reveals his true identity to the student council. These are funny horizontal mechs that kind of just plug the humans in and, like, leave them open in the front and the rear.
Well, yeah, because I assume that's supposed to play into... Because I don't remember the... But it's supposed to be, like, it's their belts.
Yeah.
They don't like clothing, but they'll wear belts, and then the mech is essentially...
Just like Final Fantasy characters.
Yeah, it's like, around their waist, and I want to say the name is probably a pun in Japanese, but I don't remember what it... But I'm pretty sure that was the... I always thought there was, like, one or two moments where we see that you know, they forgo clothing, but they wear the belts and the vests and everything, and then this is just an exaggerated, you know...
I also think it's there just to cover up the important bits for humor. It's, like, barely wearing anything, but just enough to cover the dangers.
It doesn't leave much to the imagination, so...
Yeah. But it turns out that Lady Satsuki had a plan of her own, and she knew that they would come and fight at the same time. I'm well aware of your identity, Akuro, and this is all a ploy to get you out of hiding so we can destroy the Nudist Beach headquarters.
All according to Kakaku.
I mean, whatever. This was the purpose behind the Tri-City Schools raid, to uncover and destroy the Nudist Beach organization, which was hiding behind the scenes and offering support to the schools of Kansai. So, yeah, once again, Satsuki comes out on top, apparently. The Elite Four transform into their Mark II and Mark III uniforms and engage Nudist Beach in battle. Meanwhile, Ryuka manages to transform even without the final piece of Senketsu, using her skin as kind of like the... I don't know how to describe this, like the equal measure to like transform, even though it causes her physical pain.
Yeah, like the conduit to do it.
Yeah. And she uses her skin and then manages to wring the Sekai Tekku, or the glove, from Satsuki's hand, at last completing Senketsu. Which wasn't really that complicated, but she does show up on a motorbike, a moped, with Mako in tow.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a cute moment. She's wearing Senketsu as a scarf.
And I like that, because it's like a little Kamen Rider look that they do for a second.
Mm-hmm. The Mako monologue is basically, don't underestimate Ryuko. She says this very overly dramatic, as usual. Done wallowing in her rage, I will protect. Satsuki using her power to destroy. So she mentions to Satsuki, it's like, but look what you did to this city, bitch. Satsuki's like, it doesn't matter. Pigs live here. They love it when I wreck their cities. And she manages to fight toe-to-toe with Satsuki, and they eventually reach a draw with Satsuki being aided in the fight by Nonon. Their draw is essentially like, I think... She steals Bakugan. Bakuzan is the name of the sword, but I will refer to it as Bakugan forever. Yeah. From Satsuki, and then has it at her throat. And then, in the meantime, Junketsu is able to shape itself into like a dagger at Ryuko's throat. So at a stalemate.
Yeah, because Senketsu manages to do a thing where he like splashes Satsuki with blood, and Satsuki, being Satsuki, is like, "Oh, my, like, how disgusting!
Bitch, you got blood in my eyes."
And then you know, Ryuko's manages to do the sneak attack.
Yeah,
you know,
and they're at a kind of stalemate. They're saying, "Put each other's blades down, and I'll walk away, but then you won't get your chance to avenge your father." Well, what do I do there? I do like their interactions. It's like the two Nudist Beach dudes are fighting two of the Elite Four, and then Mako is with Gamagori, of course, just giving him the stare down instead of throwing the scissor blade to Ryuko.
Yeah.
So they're more shipping. I always like to bring it up. With blades at each other's necks, a symbiotic relationship with the life fibers, Ryuko hands back over Bakuzan. So after this is all over and Nonon kind of like fights, Satsuki is like, you keep Bakuzan, but then Ryuko's like, I don't need it, and hands it back to Satsuki at the same time. Satsuki agrees to call off the battle and return to Honnoji Academy with the students, but not before Nonon Jakuzure destroys the nudist beach base off screen.
Yeah.
I took care of it. Like, was it under the city? One could assume, right? Yeah. Because in the next episode, they're like,
we have nothing. Yeah.
This is what's left. The objective fulfilled. The student council returns to Honnoji Academy. Ryuko, Makuman Kachiyoko, Akuru, and Sumugu gaze at the destroyed city, and Akuru tells Ryuko now the time has come to learn the truth about her father, which basically doesn't happen in the next episode.
Yeah.
Why we skipped over it, which I'll get to, but I do like when Satsuki, she's like posing in the air, and then we find out that she's on a plane or a chopper transitioning away.
She's in the
loves the drama.
Most anime villains own one of those double rotor helicopters with the back, so it makes for good exits.
So the second part of the cutting room, episode 16, what we missed, we skipped over this because it's basically a very quick, like 5 minute 10 minute abridged recap of the entire series, quickly narrated by Senketsu. But we do get a little bit more backstory for our villains and behind the scenes. Ragio Kurin shows Satsuki a chamber in their mansion containing the original life fiber, and it is revealed to be an extraterrestrial entity that produces parasitic fibers to feed on mankind. She then instructs Satsuki to organize a school festival as the final step in her plan to distribute life fibers within clothes across the world. So I thought that Dan would enjoy this because he likes extraterrestrial beings as well.
I do. Yeah.
He's into those cryptids.
Yeah. No, all of them. Yeah.
Mothman. Danger Tsuchinoko.
Yes, the bee snake.
Meanwhile, Akuro, Mitsugi, and Sumugu guide Ryoko and Mako Mankachogo to an undamaged section of their underground base. Clothing chose us to wear it, so this is like the backstory where, like, we didn't evolve because of us, we evolved because clothing told us what to do. And they show us clips of, like, the pyramids being built by people in clothes.
And that's, like, you see all of the influences that go into this anime. Mm-hmm. Like I mean, obviously from the get-go, the weird ass school is, you know, there's Utena vibes in there,
there's Madoka vibes too, where it's like magical girls have been a pillar to the community the whole time.
Yeah, no, it's like integrate. And then this is because I was trying to think of what when they finally go down and see the original life fiber. Mm-hmm. It's like the Neon Genesis,
it is like
it's
that.
Something dogma. I forget what it's, Terminal Dogma or whatever. I was going to say Dragon's Dogma, but that's not, but it's the same, like, oh, we've had this alien underneath the thing this whole time, and, you know.
In a cocoon.
Yeah.
Like a butterfly in a cocoon. Whatever, I'm sorry. Akuro reveals that life fibers are what introduced humanity's evolution into human Homo sapiens, and then it's the instinct to wear clothes ever since.
Cover your shame.
Well, we did learn that Jesus exists in the next episode, so where was he in this? He further explains that Ishin Matoi founded Nudist Beach and created Senketsu for Ryoko to wear and fight the Kiruins when she came of age, as she displays a high resistance to life fibers. So we get that whole backstory that this has been predestined from the start as well, that Ryuko and Senketsu would eventually get together. Ryuko becomes outraged that Nudist Beach sees Senketsu as little more than a weapon and takes him off, refusing to let him kill his own kind, deeming them of no more worth. Sumugu prepares to kill Ryuko and Senketsu, and nothing happens from this. And the next episode that we see, they're like at each other's throats, and then it's quickly, Mako's like, stop that! She does the Velma, don't do that! And then that's it.
Yeah.
They're fine once again, but we do get a new opening with our cast changing outfits while walking on a runway, meeting their destiny, opposed, and then conjoined fighting each other, and then Ryuko and Satsuki battling, and a new ending, cute with Mako costume changing in a Barbados Ben style Stuart Little montage. Deep cut. All right, episode 17, tell me why. Successful school raid. Satsuki returns back to Honnoji Academy and is like, we're going to prepare something else for mom who's coming to visit. This is going to be the Grand Culture and Sports Festival.
As is for these Japanese schools, it's, you know, there's always a sports festival.
I mean, like, we just got back from the Tri-City Rays trip, and now we need a Grand Culture and Sports Festival? But Raggio is going to be visiting the school, so they're on to be on their best behavior and to prepare for Lady Oragio's homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Mako monologue, it would be gross. So she's stopping the fight between Sumugu and Ryuko at this point. And she's like, it would be gross if you wore Senketsu and didn't love him. Everyone is friends with clothes again, so let's get over it. And then they're just like, huff. And they walk off at each other. After the fight between Ryuko Matoi and Sumugu is dissolved thanks to Mako Mankachoko and Senketsu, who's like hopping along at this point. Like, no one, they can't hear him, but they can't see this clothing clearly hopping next to Ryuko.
Yeah.
Akaro explains to her that Sumugu's sisters, Kinue, died in an experiment involving life fibers, going on to explain that Senketsu was made with Ryuko's DNA. So we find out that she used to work, Sumugu's sister used to work for Raggio and the father figure, her husband, right?
Yeah.
And not with her husband. This was after. It was like in Nudist Beach times.
Yeah, it was because Nudist Beach had a lab at one point. So yeah.
I'm crossing my episode. Spoilers, I'm sorry. But and she was she died in a clothing accident. And her last words were like,
keep the work going.
Like, keep the work going. Keep on keeping on.
Yeah.
And then Sumugu's like, I have to avenge her. And you're walking down this same path, Ryuko. So you have to be careful.
Yeah.
So I'm worried about your connection with clothing. Many life. Oh, wait, where am I?
Tea with
Satsuki. So she brings up the fact that father showed me Junkets and told me this is my wedding outfit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the message we get from Satsuki constantly. We then get Gamagori the next day going, no stars, it's mandatory to welcome Raggio with mandatory dress uniforms provided. Mankanshoku. Gathered together in like this ultra anime style, and they're like, where's our daughter?
and is it catered?
Yeah, and they're like overly drawn, it's very cute, and they're like, it's catered? Well, hot damn, we'll be there with bells. We're gonna eat in our daughter's memory, even though she's alive. Nudist Beach watches the preparation from afar on their hidden characters, and many life fibers are being taken into the academy. The academy has been a testing ground the whole time, and learning that a cover-up for the final experiment in which all of Hono City will be sacrificed to the life fibers. Ryuko and the others head for Hinoji while the ceremony has begun. So at this point, like, it's the next day. They're all in the stadium. The Mankanshokus are all dressed except for little Mako. Not Mako. It's Matoi. No, what's his name? I forget his name.
I forget boy's name too, but he's wearing a painted on tux.
Yeah, I have it here somewhere. Motaro.
Motaro.
Has his suit painted on. He's like, I sold that shit as soon as I got it up. What do you take me for? A scalper after our own hearts. Raggio arrives, and she's clearly not evil.
But oh,
she's
sir.
Like, yeah, she's projecting herself in the sky. She descends on high and like a Maleficent style hairdo going on.
Yeah, and I forget that I always forget that happened too, that she gives herself like the jester royalty makeover with like the ruffle collar and the
18th century.
I guess like her new hairstyle was easier to animate when they had to do like fluid movement.
I miss the Karen bangs that youth.
Yeah.
The Karen cut. But she says, I'm not here for evil, I'm just here acting as the emissary for covers, which is never a good sign.
Yeah.
Whenever you see an emissary, I think of Stephen King's The Mist, where it's like, I speak for the creatures of the mist. You get out of there, baby, because that's not gonna end well. As Ryuko begins having the life fibers devour everyone in the stadium, Ryuko and company arrive on the scene, riding Mikusugi's Dotonbori Robo, which he insists on calling a DTR, which I think is a sex thing, but
yeah, no, that's what I—that's like what I was at. Like, I was asking, like, what if that's a pun for something, and I would assume
it has to be a pun. Either that, or he just prefers the shorter name. But it sounds like an STD to me. But he hates the full name. Ryuko then challenges Raggio, but just then, when Raggio is going, "You fool!" she gets stabbed through the back with Satsuki, and like at first when I was rewatching this after years, I did not remember this moment either.
Yeah.
I did not remember, like, I remember how it ended, and like clearly Raggio was evil, but I did not remember this betrayal happening so quickly.
Yeah.
But Satsuki stabs Raggio through the back and announces her rebellion against her and the life fibers, revealing this to be the purpose she has built Hinoji Academy for. People do not live for the sake of clothing. and you will die at my hands, mother.
And it's well done. It's it's a splendidly done turn of events.
It's bloody.
Yeah, there's like no more heroes, like blood fountain.
Ragio is crucified
for
the sins of clothing.
But she's fine.
No, and Ryoko goes, Jesus!
Holy fuck.
Yeah, what's going on here? But yet again, where was Jesus during this
day? Was there a clothing conspiracy? Who knows? We're getting Prometheus here. So.
And our last episode of the pod today, we've got episode 18, Into the Night. So Satsuki has created the academy to destroy Ragio, and after freeing all the trapped students and citizens from the life fibers, the Elite Four fight against Nui Harame, while Mako... Mankachoko helps through the evacuation, so Nui is posed and is like, I didn't expect this. Real cute, huh?
Yeah.
And Sanageyama challenges her first, but clearly, like, she's still, like, she's getting, like, whiffed around a little bit, but not any substantial damage on her. She's using this doppelganger technique. It's like petit minifil or whatever the French say.
Yeah, well, you would know. It
translates. It's something cut of me. It's like little cuts of me or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's, Dan, I've never taken French. I've only learned through osmosis and my own talent. Satsuki put on a false front in order to go through with the plan the whole time. So Ryoko's like, but you could have killed me the whole time. And she's like, I didn't want to deal with any of your weak shit. So get your act together.
And it's not like any of this comes as like, it doesn't break any of the established character because like, you know, Satsuki would not want nudist beach and like random people messing up her plan. So that's all in character. So
I have no need for half-baked allies is what Dan will say to me when they legalize marijuana in New Jersey. But meanwhile, Satsuki reveals how Ragio Kurin had used her in life fiber experiments as a baby, along with her newborn sister. That plot line came out of nowhere this episode and gets quickly resolved, didn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, at first I was like, they could have drew this out. Like, we could have been piecing together the mystery because clearly in the flashbacks, Ragio and her husband look a little different.
I would say that, I mean, I agree with that, but I think at this point, like, especially when this, like, you know, at the point that this anime came out, like, if you see a suspicious baby, you know that's the main character probably. Mm-hmm. So I think even if they drew it out, people would have foreseen the twist coming, so they kind of just did it in their comedic, like, this heretofore unmentioned baby.
And they do reveal, like, I think it's in the next episode, or one of the later episodes, they reveal how Ryuko's dad changed shape, and it's kind of hilarious. It's like, he developed a hunch.
Marsh Prime!
basically. But anyway, Satsuki is going on this. She was discarded by Ragio when the experiment allegedly... Oh, wait. Her baby sister was discarded by Ragio when the experiment allegedly failed. The father, Ichiro, rebelled and plans for primordial life fiber. The sewing club is below the Ragio mansion, taking care of the original life fiber through ice, because when Satsuki stayed over there, like, the last episode... She hornswoggled the butler and the servant gang in order to set up this like coup that's being staged. However, Rei Homoru, who is the assistant to the assistant of Ragio, she's there, frees Ragio. She's the one who's like in prison for like a hot second, is like Mistress Ragio.
How she does it is actually pretty she jumps to take a sword slash from Satsuki.
Yeah.
And Satsuki's like sword slash like obliterates this assistant, but also frees the, so you know, just how fanatically devoted, you know, this assistant is to Ragio.
And she doesn't get a lot of backstory.
No.
So like we barely know anything about her.
Yeah.
Which is odd because every other character is kind of expanded upon in this anime. I just thought that was a little, you know, candle up for Rei.
Yeah.
Hold your light us up.
Because she's not, she, I mean, that could be a rep, because her name is Rei, she's got, like, white hair, she might, she's probably artificial, so.
Maybe. We find out Ragio is able to heal her injuries due to being her body fused with life fibers, and takes over Satsuki's army of one-star students using her mental refitting slash mind-stitching technique, which is cool.
Yeah.
I don't understand how it works exactly, but it's animated that their brains are being stitched over in red thread, and they're, if they're strong enough, they're able to rip off into their own skull and take out the thread.
Yeah, and they, yeah, the way it's animated, they go translucent, yeah, so we can see who's under control and stuff. Mm-hmm. Again, it's like a lot of good visual choices that, you know. And yeah, I gotta say, another point for Raggio, when the whole Dressrosa saga in One Piece was unfolding, which, mm-hmm, I think it would have been unfolding either after Kill la Kill came out,
or around
out
the same time.
Yeah.
At the ending, probably, yeah.
And Doflamingo famously also had, his devil fruit is like the thread one. It's like the string fruit or whatever. And Raggio kind of comes out on top in that, because she uses it in, like, goofy sewing ways, but, mm-hmm, not ones that strain, like, you know, it's the, oh, the thread hasn't cut, my head is still attached.
The
and
thread won't cut? What's, you know, the matter with these scissors?
And it's not to, like, shit talk, like, Doflamingo, like, you know, because Doflamingo was a cool, really cool villain in his own right, but he, with him, it was like, I sewed together my large intestine because you slashed it, but,
oh,
Raggio gets to do it in, like, a more theatrical, villainous way, I think, so.
Okay, so the army is taken over, Akiro and Sumugu fight against them. Raggio then reveals another ace up her sleeve. It's like, you invited the Ryuko girl. This is a bad move on your part, sweetie.
Yeah.
Because she's easily able to take over Ryuko.
Honey, you got a storm.
And she's able to take over Ryuko, realizes that she's uber powerful even without being synchronized with Senketsu,
mm-hmm,
and she makes a good pawn to fight against Satsuki. But after this fight, Satsuki basically goes, wake the fuck up, and Ryuko punches herself in the face and pulls the thread out of her own head.
Yeah,
and after snaps her, back in. Yeah.
After her bang clips it.
Yeah.
Which is always her, yeah, little red...
yeah, just swivels. And meanwhile, Nui's doing, like, these Paper Mario, as I mentioned, like, just moving, like, a fucking paper figure.
Yeah.
Like, that I love her animation.
Yeah.
She's, like, flipping 2D style while the other characters are fighting. It's just kooky. But then Satsuki is like, clearly you have to join me now. Like, we have to fight against this greater evil. And Ryoko's like, that bitch is going down. So Nui is fighting with her clones to hold off the Elite Four. With her and Senketsu's Ryuko's synchronization at its peak, Ryuko quickly gains the advantage over Nui, leaving the Grand Couturier shook and wondering how a mere human could be so strong. And wasn't Satsuki's idea to kill Ryuko's father at all? It was mine and Lady Raggio's.
Yeah.
So, like, it's this whole... Like, at first it's like, it wasn't me. It was me. No, it was her. And now it's us again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's this whole telenovela structure going, yeah, on. But life fiber synchronization does activate at that point, and Ryuko is spurned to attack Raggio. Meanwhile, Satsuki goes to fight Raggio, slicing off her head, and initially we think, oh, the battle's over here, because, like, it turns black and white, the blood is pouring down, everything's dramatically animated, mm-hmm, that Satsuki is like, it's been done. However, it is revealed that the original life fiber at that same time under the mansion resist Iori's attack and forces the sewing club into retreat as it begins releasing life fibers and covers into the sky. As the news reaches Satsuki, she is attacked by Raggio, who survives the previous attack due to a single unsevered life fiber connecting her head to her neck. And,
yeah,
she's able just to reattach as easy as pie.
And she yeah, pops it back, yeah, in. Which, yeah.
After reattaching her head, Raggio unleashes a brutal beatdown on Satsuki and reveals these powers that she should have revealed a little bit earlier, I think. She does, like, a whole, like, tap and then sends her into, like, the next dimension.
Yeah.
Dead. And she snaps the Bakuzan in two and reveals that Satsuki was never able to unlock Jinketsu's true power because it doesn't fit her, but it's able to fit me.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm, which in its own right is a dramatic moment, because she's like, you know, you might seem like hot shit, but you've been forcing that uniform,
yeah,
onto you. You haven't been, like, attuned to it, so.
And she gives a bad touch Kamehameha.
Yeah, she does.
Don't touch.
Yeah.
Sonic said, no good. A final blast knocks Satsuki unconscious, allowing Ragyu to take Junketsu for herself. I don't remember her wearing Junketsu ever until this episode, and I think this is the only time she wears Junketsu.
Because again, it's a very weird swerve. Yeah. It's like, you know,
they
you
have
don't...
the animation ready.
And she does it, she takes it off screen, and then she just, like, she throws Satsuki away, and she's just, the mom has the uniform. So,
Karen's in charge now. As Ragyo throws her daughter into the wall of the arena, an army of life fibers appears in the sky. As Ryuko stares at the army of living clothing, Ragyo activates Junketsu and rips out Ryuko's heart, and revealing it to be covered in life fibers. Ryuko can only stare in bewilderment, horror, as Ragyo gleefully reintroduces herself as her long-lost mother. So it's like... clearly no human would be able to survive this. Are mine. Mommy.
You are the babe that was thrown out with the bathwater. So.
But it's a good twist. It is. I mean, it took 18 episodes, but it's there. I mean, it's shoehorned into this one episode. If they would have built it up a little bit more, I felt like it would have been a little bit more fluid.
Certainly. Yeah. I feel like with the amount of time they had, like, at no point if they put it in, it would have been like, you know, baby is real.
Yeah, we would have caught on. Like, we caught on from baby. It's like my twin sister that I've never mentioned in 17 episodes until this point.
Baba is you.
Basically. But with that, our three episodes are done. Dan, any final thoughts?
Just amazing action and animation and visuals, as always. I love Ragyo.
I think I do, too. I think she's a great villain.
She's perfectly hammy. She's got a cool power set, cool
design.
And it
only gets better in the last seven episodes. So I'm happy to see where we're going, but I do love the ham. I like the sister reveal and where they go with it, but I think, as I said, it's a little heavy-handed at this point.
Yeah,
but that would be my only thing. I do not think we needed the Tri-City raid, which is why we didn't watch those episodes, but they're there. They probably had like a set amount of episodes they had to make.
I would assume,
And they had to meet it, but, you know, nitpicking. This thread.
But it's certainly, even its lower points are not, you know, it's still a quality anime the entire way through. So it never disappoints.
And I'm happy to look forward to the end. I think we have two more episodes of the Kill la Kill on this podcast to get to, which hopefully I think we'll do before our 100th episode.
Yes,
since this is 88, we've got a few more to fill. With that, Dan, is there anywhere that our audience can find us on social media?
You can.
Oh wait, no. We have our section. We have our new section.
How did
I forget?
Right.
What is it called?
Tasting time.
Tasting time. So, who would Kill la Kill be for? Especially these three episodes. Pardon me, audience. I forgot. Dan has to remind me. They weren't in my notes.
I would say, for one, if you just enjoy like over the top, like trigger, you know, action anime, then this is, there is just so much like visual pop in this, like if that's what you're going in for, like again, the story goes to a lot of like sometimes cliche places, but it makes up for it with the humor and the characters and just the action, or the way it's presented.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want kind of like the peak of trigger goodness or for its time, then I would say that this anime will certainly, you know, satisfy that. You know, with these episodes in particular, like you would go into it. I don't know how to, because you wouldn't want to go into these episodes with no background.
Well, I mean, we could be referencing the series as well, since we watched like the series and we introduced this segment, you know, after we started.
Yeah, but in very much like if you were, you know, 90s anime fan, like a lot of the tropes from shows that you would recognize and love are all presented in some capacity in this show, and you know, it makes it interesting. So
this is an anime for people who like telenovela style twist. The baby was mine. This is an anime for people who like tasteful nude butt shots that are slightly covered, both male and female. Plenty of butts to go around, whatever you care about. This is an anime for people who like giant metal fighting crabs and of the sorts, mechs and clothing in general. I will say, I think we can conjoin this, that you can find this anime, I know off the top of my head, because that's where I researched it. It's a physical release from Right Stuff, if you have the money for it. If mm-hmm. not, it is available on Netflix. I believe only the sub is on Netflix, yeah. and on Crunchyroll, both of them for free.
Yeah.
So enjoy Kill la Kill if you ever get the chance to, if you haven't seen it yet.
We sincerely recommend, with all of our heart and soul, we recommend Kill la Kill to everyone.
All my body.
What do I have to give?
But with that, Dan, I hated to interrupt you, but where can our audience find us on social media?
You can follow me at king_Danis on Instagram and our adjacent Anime Was Not a Mistake podcast Instagram account.
And you can find me, Jonathan Wachowski, at Losing My Mind JK on Instagram, Drink and Read JK on the Twitter, or my other movie / drinking podcast, Nightcaps of the Theater. Halloween isn't over, and it probably won't be over till Christmas. We've been very busy. We've got two episodes. I'm just waiting for the opening to post them.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, we watched Evil Dead 2 and Idle Hands. More to come throughout the month of December. We're still alive. We're still there.
Of course.
Just trust me, life is an enigma at this point.
No, but it is.
But we're there.
Yeah.
So I would appreciate the follow on both, but... Dan, what are we watching next time? Before Thanksgiving, pre-Thanksgiving. Wait, is next week Thanksgiving?
The week after, I think.
Jesus.
I think.
Ryuko. Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah. What the fuck is that? Yeah. However, as you said, we are past Halloween.
Spooky.
But I would say we haven't exorcised all our demons yet.
Oh, no.
The next two episodes that I will be hosting... we're gonna be looking at two movies.
Movies.
You know, one movie per episode. Mm-hmm. When I have hosting duties, either one of these movies probably would have been a very substantial Halloween pick, mm-hmm. but I decided to save them because they're both from the same franchise, but they, owing to who made them and the time periods that they came out in, they are very different.
Mm.
So the purpose of watching, you know, them in close
proximity,
it'll be good for comparison's sake.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, we hope you'll join us next time as we're gonna go on horseback, join a mysterious shadowy figure with a big hat and a long cape. As we watch Vampire Hunter D.
Oh my god, a classic! Mm. A Vlasic classic. That's a pickle, baby.
Don't stop the count.
Here at Anime Was Not a Mistake, we have one mission. Whether you be a magical girl, a giant fighting robot, a raccoon, or just a fan of podcasts in general, we hope to one day arrive at a definitive answer to the following question. Is anime a mistake? While we obviously don't think so, there's no harm in expanding our weeb horizons now, is there? As of late, our humble little show is devoted to the analysis and discussion of movies, series, and episodes that show off that powerful art that is animation. However, none of this would be possible without listeners like you. If you like what you hear on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and more, then why not support us on Instagram at Anime Was Not a Mistake Podcast, or on Facebook at Anime Was Not a Mistake Pod. We promise to go halfies on the sake with you. Join us, won't you? This time and the next. And with that, Dan and I leave you with a to be continued as the chill anime beats play. Sayonara!